Hi, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Like our other episodes, this one has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. Typically, we connect you to a variety of contemplative teachers, hearing their story and sharing a meditative practice. But today, we flip the tables a little bit, and Joey Taylor, our producer, interviews yours truly, and we have a conversation around Thanksgiving and brave space and the interior work we do to be prepared for difficult conversations and some of the ways that that happens with family. So in a sense, it's kind of like a Thanksgiving survival packet. And there's even a little bonus. If you make it to the end of the episode, you get one of my favorite cocktail recipes for Thanksgiving. Later on in the week, we'll have a pocket practice where you can take that practice and do it on your own. You could be doing a million different things right now. You're probably in the van with the family heading over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. So before you tune into this, just kind of look around. Notice the space around you. Smile at the kids in the back and dive in with us. And later on, we'll have a time for a specific practice. And so you might want somebody else to be driving during that time, or maybe you save that for some time during the weekend where you can take a breath and meditate with us. Thanks so much, and look forward to having you listen in. Today we're going to do something a little different. It's a holiday episode. Joey Taylor, who has been our producer at From the Hive from the beginning, some of this is actually his fault and his idea. And so we were talking and thought, what if we had a conversation, just the two of us, that would set up some stuff for the context here of Thanksgiving and family and whatever. So, hey, Joey.
Hi. I think that we all kind of go into holiday, especially Thanksgiving, and are anticipating some awkward, maybe difficult conversations. So I'm excited to be a soundboard for you to tell us kind of how to enter into this with the right intention and the right posture. So maybe as we start, could you tell us maybe a story that would exemplify the dynamics we're about to discuss?
You know, I remember a couple different stories. One is I remember when Kelly and I first moved out to Spokane, Washington, there was this guy, Foster Walsh, who was a teacher and had done some work at Parker Palmer and was, you know, kind of an interesting, gregarious guy. Used to do parachurch youth stuff. When we'd go to dinner at his house, rather than have like a blessing, he would ask this question. And it got to be this thing where, like, Kelly and I, when we would drive over to the Walsh's house, they're probably going to listen to this and laugh because they were great friends. Kelly would start to say, like, the words we would use now is like, I'm starting to get tight, like, and feel like, because she would just start bracing herself, like, he's going to ask a question that's going to be like way too intimate. I don't know how the answer to this will work. And yet there was something about the safety of knowing, like, that's the kind of conversation you have with Foster Walsh, that you began to expect it. And so it was kind of like this type of exercise. And yet usually when we go home then with our families, nobody wants Troy to be the facilitator.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Nobody wants a special exercise. And frankly, if you're the facilitator, there's kind of a trick of like you're wanting to control something to get ahead of it with an aggressive stance or whatever. So what is it like to be responsive? So then I can think of plenty of times with family where the conversation would resort to football, of which I have nothing to say. I don't know about these sport games. But also, like, you would just kind of mumble into the same conversation and eventually make your way to the cocktail section to change up the recipe for the night, you know, just to kind of survive it.
Yeah, totally. So in that situation with Foster, did you feel like he was trying to control the environment too much?
No, I don't think he was controlling it. I think he was, though, throwing some possibility on the table. What's possible in this conversation that we didn't expect? A lot of us aren't trained to go to that sort of space. We've been having these conversations here, right? We call them courage to connect. And we did it because we actually, again, Parker Palmer, we had been reading about that space of paradox where there's one thing you want and there's another thing happening on the, like, and I'm holding my hands left and right here, like, on one hand there's one desire and on another hand there's another desire, and this happens in life a lot of times. Say you're a professor and you want there to be a big idea and the student wants to talk about a particular, or you want to talk about a particular and the student wants to ask about the big idea. That's one example of a paradox. And what Parker Palmer describes in his book, The Courage to Teach, is that the teacher moves from being the expert that's trying to control the conversation to being somebody who's vulnerably present to that suffering created by the paradox, to the wanting one side or the other, and can you bravely hold that open? So we've started having these conversations here, whether it's around race or politics or education or neighborhoods. Daniel Hughes has been helping facilitate some of that. And we stumbled into the work of the People's Supper. There's actually a little page we use from Mickey Scott Bay Jones where she talks about brave space, that it's not perfect, but it's a desire to create a space where you attempt to honor one another, where you attempt to explore what's possible, where you can just listen without jumping in with advice and those sort of things. And I guess I'm swerving around all of that because that's different than the family table.
Yeah, I think one huge difference is that when I come into a situation like a family meal at Thanksgiving, even if I intend to be a co-creator of the space, I feel much more like a visitor in the space, that the space has already been set. So is there some things that we can apply from the idea of creating brave space, maybe internally, before we move into a space where we feel like we're only visitors in?
Yeah, that question of am I a visitor here is a huge one. There's a couple things that are firing for me. I'm the oldest of four. Well, at first, you know, as the other kids were growing up, I just was never home. Like, you know, I wanted to just be somewhere else, more exciting. But then as time moved on and I got more connected back to the family, I would be the one that was kind of playing the Foster Walsh, kind of pushing some things. And based on their personality, different family members would duck or would create a joke to kind of lighten it up. Mm-hmm. Or my dad and I would lock horns. He'd kind of try to play the contester, you know, and kind of and push back and forth a little bit there. And I think this is different than that. I think brave space is not about looking to clear a space in the table where my opinions are heard. I think it's more about staying curious and taking care of myself, not being triggered, but then being vulnerably present, like aware and present to the family. I may not be the best example of this, right? Especially when it comes to home. So it was a couple months ago, my folks were here visiting the Hive, and it was on the tail end of having done one of those Courage to Connect gatherings, you know. And so then I kind of bring up, this is what we do, just waiting for them to go like, oh, interesting, tell me more. And they didn't, you know. And then I was like, do you want to try it? And my parents were really gracious, you know, and they did. And it brought up things that we hadn't talked about before. I could feel the tension in my body, and I could see it in my parents' reactions and the way our voices changed, all of us. And we were actually building these bookshelves here. So we were just building bookshelves talking. And because of being in this building and remembering that practice, I could kind of stay like, could I pull out a little bit and look at the bigger picture of what's happening here, rather than this is me and my dad in a archetypal battle for control of the narrative, but really more like, what's shifting in the world around us? Where are people's hearts broken? Where do we hurt? And can I say how I hurt without needing for somebody to completely agree with my position? Can I get through this is a whole different kind of conversation, but just get through the brokenness of childhood, where pretty much anybody that survives adolescence leaves separated from their parent in a way that leaves a type of wound. Am I trusted? Do my parents really understand me? Can I leave that anxiety alone enough to just be present to my mom and dad in this conversation? And it, frankly, when it was done, it was done. Like, it was like we'd kind of pushed as far as we could, the tension. And I was like, probably should just walk down and get some coffee, you know. And we walked down to the coffee shop in my liberal neighborhood here or whatever. And I was like, probably don't even want to keep that conversation going on, you know. And we just changed the subject and talked about music or something. And it was great. I'm not even sure if that's necessarily like a role model for how to do it, except that I noticed what was happening in my body as a description of, I think, what a lot of us are going into in a typical Thanksgiving or going back home for the holidays, is your body is tight. I'll just say it, for me, I was wrestling between, am I going to win this? How much time will it take to turn the conversation? Am I trusted? And then all of a sudden questions like, am I safe pop up? Which I think is the part here that's really interesting, is you can be safe and be aware of your vulnerability at the same time, and you're always calibrating them both. So to be vulnerable and to be boundaryless are two different things. And we tend to think they're one or the other. We talk about vulnerability, I remember that Jerry Maguire piece at the beginning that, where he was like, we should just tell each other everything we're thinking, you know, and then she punches him in the face, right? Like, at a certain point, vulnerability can be self-serving, where it's simply like, I want somebody to know how I feel about this. And then it moves to, I want everybody to know how I feel about this. And then it moves to, I want everybody to repeat to me how I feel about this. And that, like, that itself is a type of control.
Yeah, so it sounds like instead of consenting to the terms of this power dynamic, you're creating a different condition for entering into the conversation. What internally do you have to do to be able to enter into a conversation where you're able to understand the appropriate boundaries, but also be able to offer yourself in vulnerability to other people?
It's good. Now I'm starting to see the perilous nature of this conversation, because I'm flashing through my mind is so many conversations I've screwed up. So so I'll tell you what I've found that's worked, and I can also tell you what didn't work. I think that finding home base is really important. So one of the facilitators here at the Hive, Leslie Hirschberger, talks about your intention matched with a practice. And I think that that's close to how I would describe it too. So we do centering prayer together here each week. That's one of my primary contemplative practices. In that space, there's a sense of settling in meditation to where I'm at home, but not attached, not retaining a thought, not resisting it, just recognizing that I'm at home. Or as one of my teachers, Jim Finley, would say, that like, infinite love is infinitely giving itself away as the concrete immediacy of this very second, of this moment. If I can practice that and feel that in my body this morning, as part of my prayer practice, then I can return to that at other times during the day, to a type of somatic, a type of embodied reality. That's not necessarily an idea. It's a decision to let my body rest in that being at home. For me, I've had to develop a muscle memory for that. Like, my body has to know where that is so that I can then respond, or so I can notice the difference between that and the triggered body. So the triggered body is afraid that I'm going to run out of opportunity. Triggered body is afraid that somebody's going to cut me off. The triggered body is afraid that I'm going to be abandoned. And so if I'm in a conversation, if it's a political conversation with somebody, and they begin to bring up the counter argument, and their experience, they define it differently than mine, and I begin to try to throw a narrative on that, it's because I'm trying to stop them from co-opting my narrative. I notice that tension even as I'm describing it. My shoulders kind of come in, and I have to go like, can I stop and drop in, and does my body remember that I'm at home?
So I think I sort of conceive of this infinite love giving itself away as this present moment, as this abundance that hopefully not just we are participating in, but also the people around the table are participating in as well. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm wondering, is it possible not to be triggered, but to respond in gratitude to moments with people around the table who are reminding you of that reality?
This past month, I've come across a lot of different books. I'm reading Cynthia Brazeau's book, and we were using this for something at a recent gathering here, the Merton's story at 4th and Walnut, which is kind of a point in his journey. After decades in the monastery, he moves out of this cloistered space and describes walking through Louisville and seeing everyone as this brilliant light. And he's like, you try to explain to folks that that's what they are. They don't see this. And he's like, we're walking around and there's this glorious connection that there's not a separation between myself and them. So in the same way that you're pulling in, there's also a pulling out sometimes. I say pulling out like if you think of a camera focus that moves to capture the whole room. You could even do that really quickly. There's the Eames who designed these modern chairs, whatever. They used to do these documentaries, and one of them was about looking at perspective, and they had this piece where they took a picture of somebody's sandwich, and then it showed that they were at a picnic blanket, and the picnic blanket was in Central Park, and then they'd zoom up and you see New York, and then you zoom back and you see the continent, and then you zoom back and you see the globe. At a certain point, there's something happening that's more than just the sandwich in front of that couple. I think that that's some of the same leap. If I can make that leap internally and go, I'm at home and infinite love is giving itself away as this moment, which is me safely here, nowhere else in this body, and it's good enough. That's in, like, fully loved, fully present. That I can take those snapshots and move back and go, here's a table filled with extraordinary people. And within them is that same thing taking place. In fact, the interaction between the two of us or the eight of us, it's like an anthropologist going, like, what's happening at that table? And then begin to go, like, that's happening at tables all over this continent right now. And then you realize there are feasts and abundance happening around this entire globe right now. People in relationship with each other whose guts are tightened up because their dad's going to ask a question that they don't know the answer to, or Foster Walsh is going to bring, like, and the whole globe is contracting and then kind of breathing and recognizing they're at home here. And, like, you're a part of that. So I think at its core, a lot of it has to do with compassion. Like, I have to start going, like, don't be so hard on myself about this. And then I can actually look at a family member or somebody else that's difficult to be with. Maybe it's not a family member, but somebody else that you're with in kind of a sensitive way, and go, like, how can I have compassion for them that they're discovering this, they're on a journey as well.
So is this a fair take on what you just said? Are you saying that curiosity and awe are derived from a sense of self-compassion and compassion for others?
Yeah, that's great. Compassion to me begins to be, wherever you're listening to this, there's a moment in which your heart starts to beat and you go, I don't know if I'm going to have enough time. I don't know if I'm doing enough. And if you can capture that thought, almost like in a thought bubble, and just be incredibly patient with yourself and say, what if there's not enough time? What if it's not enough work and all that's gone? Who else is left? And if you can see that small, simple person and still love her or him, still love that person and go, I'm grateful that that person is in the world, is right here breathing. It takes some of that tension out, and then you begin to go, what else is there happening inside of this simple Troy-shaped presence in the world? And what kind of ride is he on right now? And where did he come from? And so then there's those moments where that leaps outside of my own personal experience into the room and into the family and into the community. A couple days ago, I had the privilege to be with John McKnight and Peter Block, and these organizers, like, how did you guys find each other was one of the questions. And John told this story where Peter Block was invited to come with these city planners and architects, the ones that kind of get it, I'm using air quotes here, the ones that were saying this is about community building and relationship or whatever. And they were at this conference center where Peter and John and a couple other folks were the speakers, but Peter was the second speaker, and he got up there, and it was still set up like your typical hotel behind a podium and the big moat between the speaker and the audience that are all in their chairs. Peter does a little bit of his ho-hum, then at a certain point, he just sits silent. John said it was like 4 minutes of just silence. And then he leans forward with that squirrely grin and says, I'm bored. Are you bored? Why are we doing this? What are we doing right here? And then he was quiet again. And at some point he goes, like, what's possible with our day together today? At some point somebody kind of raises a hand and says, like, we could sit a little closer. Sure. You could come down here and, like, be here. Yeah, that's great. And somebody else is like, well, we could move the chairs a little bit. And folks began to kind of go, like, there's a way we could plan this and take responsibility together for how the rest of that conference is going to go. And so there's a weird thing that happened there that I think is connected to all of this. The bravery of his conversation, it did happen because he had a pulpit, right? Or because he had a podium. We don't always have that when we're invited to the family dinner table. But what he also did was divest himself of what he needed to have happen in that meeting and put it back to the table. And I wonder how different our engagement would be, my engagement when I head up to Michigan to be with my in-laws, if it's not simply about the two choices of I disengage because it's not what I want to talk about, or I take control of the conversation so that we're talking about what I want to talk about. Is there a way to go, who are these extraordinary people around the table? And what's possible that we could do together right now?
I think oftentimes I come into these conversations and ask myself, what can I change in the other person, if I'm being completely honest, in the conversation? But it sounds like that the question of what's possible to be changed isn't the right question, but that instead it's what is possible for us to create, or for what is the thing that could emerge between us in this conversation.
What could we make together right now?
What could we make together right now?
Yeah. And what that also means is, and this is a part that we haven't spoken about, it'd be a different conversation, but there is such a thing as abuse. There is such a thing as somebody crossing a boundary that's not appropriate. And, you know, it's easier to do in the anonymity of Facebook and other things like that. But I think we're practicing that in social media, and then we sit down at the table and we act the same way. It's like Drunk Uncle from SNL. Like, we just, that's just like our habit now, because we act that way all day long with our thumbs in our machines. So to come back to, what is it possible that we could make together? Sometimes someone else, your conversation partner or somebody else at the table, isn't prepared to make something together.
They have to consent to the creation as well.
Yeah. Right? And if they aren't ready for that, how do we gently allow them to be who they're going to be and still hold a boundary where we're safe? So sometimes you might have to say in the most vulnerable way, this conversation is making me uncomfortable, and it may not be all about you, but out of love for what we could make together, can we talk about something else for a minute? The piece there isn't like avoiding hard conversations. That's, at that point, that's really about protecting yourself. I mean, I think about somebody who is recently out to their family as a queer person, and then suddenly that becomes the topic of the conversation. Some of the best thing you could simply say is trusting that you love me, and out of love for you, I want you to know, like, we're going to need to keep having this conversation, but right now it hurts too much to keep having it this way. And so I'm going to just draw the boundary there for the moment, but I'm going to stay if I can, if you can. And if you can't, you know, you can't.
Is it worth saying, how do you know when you can't stay?
I wonder if you can ask. So this is a weird part. As a cis white male, I may not be the right person to answer that question. Because for some other people's experiences, they've got to do what they've got to do. But I think that there is a way of vulnerably staying in someone's presence with courage without the need of winning the conversation. But that's a relationship choice. That's what active nonviolence is. That's a relationship choice, to choose a stance that says, I will actively be in your presence. And I'll demonstrate that with a courageous love that says, this is what I see in the world, this is who I am, and you're going to have to talk to a body about this. But it's a tall order, and probably a blurring of boundaries, to think that going home for family meal is an act of active nonviolence. Hopefully that's not what you're doing. So if you're looking for a nurturing time with family, you have to know where that difference is. And you may have to know that ahead of time.
Yeah. And if the expectation is that it might require an act of nonviolence, then I would assume the pre-work of kind of fortifying self is even more important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Boy, that went deep.
Well, do you want to pull a really, really hard left turn? And I know you're also a mixologist. Do you want to tell us a couple of cocktail recipes?
Yeah, there we go. That'll lighten the mood up a little bit. And then we'll have a practice. For one that we're making is peppercorn sage old-fashioned. So the trick there really is the simple syrup. Basic one cup of sugar to one cup of water. But I get one of those shakers with the peppercorns in them and put about a good half of the shaker worth in there. So it's somewhere roughly around 4 tablespoons of peppercorn. And with simple syrup, you just wanted to get it right to where it cracks. You don't want it to boil for a long time. It'll start to caramelize. So you've got your sugar and your water and the peppercorn, and it begins to bubble a little bit. Once you get your first crack of a boil, you turn it off and just stir it till it dilutes. Put that in a jar, and then you also take sage, just the fresh sage leaf, but probably, I'm really winging this here, but you're putting, but you're going to put like about a half a bunch of sage in there as well. And you want to do that after it's cooled off a little bit. If you put it in with it hot, it'll burn it and wilt it the way that spinach does, you know, when it gets wet. So you don't want that. You want it to cool off a little bit. You put the sage in, then just give that a day in the fridge. And then the cocktail is two parts bourbon, a half part of that peppercorn sage. You take another fresh sprig of sage and lay it in your palm and hit it so that it begins to let the oils out. You use that for rimming the cup. And then you want to add some bitters. In my case, for this Thanksgiving, I'm going to have celery bitters and orange bitters. So the celery brings out the savory, and then the orange bitters will make it taste like Thanksgiving. This one does not have a name.
It does not.
We need a name for it.
We do.
Call it Brave Space.
Brave Space. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, well, this is my first time doing this, but I'm hoping that we can do more of this in the future. We're going to have a little break here, but before we do, would you mind telling us about the practice you're going to lead?
Sure, Joey. So I'm going to invite folks to get into their bodies, and then we're going to have three different waves. My teacher, Jim Finley, led us in this a couple of years ago, and it's been a practice that I've grown to really appreciate. It's similar to the Buddhist practice of Tonglen, where you're holding in mind someone and kind of going through that compassion stuff that you talked about, moving through that first with yourself and then with others and then into the world.
Okay, perfect. We'll be right back.
All right, so this is a little meta. You're listening to me talk about me talking. You've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink. I'm the founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're located in the North Side neighborhood of Cincinnati. We've made a transition in the last couple months towards a membership model where folks pay an annual membership that breaks down to $30 a month. And in exchange, they kind of help. That's part of putting energy together to help build this place. All the classes and events are free to members, as well as on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we have open space here for co-working or grabbing coffee and conversation with a friend. If you're interested in getting a gift for a loved one who is working on their own contemplative practice or would appreciate being part of a community with that sort of intention at the intersection of justice and contemplation and art, we hope you'll think about us for a gift. You can look at our website at cincyhive.org for details on how to get a 6 or 12 month membership to a loved one. Now we'll get back to our practice. So I'm going to invite you to find a place to have a seat and notice the room around you a little bit. Notice how your feet are. If you want your hands in your lap or sitting up open on your knees or down. And what we're going to begin with is just kind of getting into our bodies. So I'm going to invite you to kind of soften your gaze. You could look at the ground and kind of close your eyes or close them 9/10, whatever, and take a couple big breaths through your mouth, filling your belly and your chest and your shoulders, and then breathing out through your mouth. Now from this space, I'm going to invite you to get a sense of balance by setting your mind's eye on the wall across the room from you and walking that attention closer to about 2 feet ahead of you. And then again, right up to your heart space where you might hold a book to read it. Move that attention through your body and notice a similar space just off your back a few inches. And then now moving that attention to the left, noticing from the ceiling to the floor. Noticing the side of the top of your head, the side your head and arm and legs. And almost like you're standing in the warm sunlight, feeling that whole left side of your body sweeping through to the right side. Same thing, noticing that entire right side of your body from the ceiling to the floor. Now settling back to your center. Breathing up as if up from the earth through your legs and into your body. Filling up from the pelvic floor to the belly, to the solar plexus and the chest. Past the heart space, through the neck and the mouth and up through your head. All the way up to the space where your busy brain is, and then out through the top of your head, breathing back into the world. You might feel that just kind of that clean, hollowed out spaciousness, what Hafiz describes as a hole on the flute that the Christ breath blows through. Now just settle into the middle of your body and just begin to notice that spaciousness, that infinite love giving itself away. This very moment. Now bring to mind that burden that you carry with you, that part of the self that is running out of time, that part of the self that isn't known, that isolated part of you. And just give it some space there in the center of your body. Notice the weight of it. Don't try to fix it. Just have compassion for that heavy weight. Appreciate that you just couldn't lift it on your own. And then now just breathe in again that love, that fresh life giving itself away this moment. Allow it to mingle together with that burden. Life and love to blow through you and to hold it, and for it to dissolve for this moment and breathe it back out. Just breathing out the love mingled with that burden until that spaciousness returns. around that spaciousness, begin to bring to mind the face of someone you love dearly, that you know well. As you look at their face, begin to look through their eyes and notice that burden that they carry, that there's just no way they could lift it. That there's not enough time, that there's not enough opportunity, or just not enough of the self to pull it up, and just watch that burden kind of drop down into your spacious self. Just hold it there for a moment. If you had to hold it all day, it would crush you, but just give it space. Kind of move around it like you're walking around a boulder. Just be aware of it. Honor it. And then breathe in that love and compassion again. And as a practice, just allow the burden and the compassion to intermingle. Love that moves faster than you, that is infinitely giving itself away, is right now mingling together with that burden inside of your spaciousness. And when you're ready, begin to breathe it out back into the world, like the carbon dioxide we breathe out that feeds the trees. Just unattached to it, just releasing it, mingled together with love. And return to that spaciousness again, the hole on the flute. The gravity of your body just held to the earth, you're not floating away. Do this one third time, and I want you to bring to mind the face of somebody you'll expect to meet this week. Somebody whose voice or whose needs or the way they present puts you at odds with them. Kind of demands an enemy status or an erasing of yourself in order for them to be. And don't do that. Just hold them in your line of sight. Just see if you can notice the burden that they carry as well. The weight of it that they may not be able to articulate any more than you or I can articulate our burden. Allow that burden just to drop down from your throat to your chest, to the spaciousness of your inner breath. just honor the weight of that burden. You already know you have no chance of lifting it. That's not the point. Just honor the weight of it. Walk around it and notice it. Begin to breathe in up from the earth the compassion. Just allow love infinitely giving itself away as this moment. Allow it to mingle with and in that spacious place around that burden. Just see if you can allow that burden and to dissolve with that love and just move around inside. Not because of any effort or cleverness or defensiveness on your part. As that swirls together, just begin to breathe it out back into the world. From that interior space, just begin to sweep it out. Just begin to feel the simplicity of this moment. A human sitting in a chair or sitting on a cushion. Breathing in life and breathing out life. As you slowly return to the room, just notice the sounds around you. I can hear the birds outside our window. Notice the light and shadow. And I'm going to invite you to end by bowing three times with me. First, I'm going to invite you to bow towards that interiority, just what's already happening within you, just a bow of respect and honor and awe. What Teresa of Avila describes as an interior castle, that you've been doing some castle work today. And then to bow a second time towards the others that you share intent and practice with. And then bow a third time out into the wider world. And to all that is changing, all that's held together by love, shimmering. Thank you. Well, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is
Joey Taylor.
And you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets
mindful everyday living.
That's right, Joey. Today, Joey and I have been talking about Thanksgiving and practice. How do you think it went here, being on that side of the mic?
It felt great to me. It felt great to me. I hope you guys love it as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Joey, for pulling it together. Now we got to pack all this stuff up so that we can head out on vacation. Joey and I aren't going on vacation together.
But we're both going to Michigan.
We are both going to Michigan. How big of a state is it? We're probably going to be in the same place.
It's a big place.
It's really like a mitten shape.
Yeah. You can definitely fit a hand right in there.
Yeah, that's it. So a tiny hand. We won't get into that.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. And be on the lookout for the pocket practice later this week. Have a great holiday. Take a deep breath. Enjoy the day.